insects are incredible creatures, aren't they? And they're so much fun to kind of watch and observe a bit. And unless sometimes they're fun. And then sometimes there's ants in the kitchen, or maybe there's a tick on your dog or on you, or maybe you've got bed bugs in your sheets. That's not good. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist, works out of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, our guest to talk about insects, maybe a little bit about this cold weather. Is it going to have an impact on those pests and other insects? You will be able to join in. The number to call with your own questions or comments, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Phil, great to have you back.
Nice to be here.
What about this winter? The ticks, people have, I've heard this come up several times, people wondering if we're going to get some relief from ticks because of the cold winter.
No. You know, the interesting thing is, so I have been asked that quite a bit, and I can only think of three or four animals out of the 25,000 species that may be impacted, and ticks definitely aren't one of them. I think horticulturally, we're more concerned about what our plants, you know, I think a lot of plants that have, we're kind of marginally planted here. My neighbor who has a peach tree, I am afraid, is not going to be happy with it. But most of the insects are insulated well enough between the snow and being down in the soil, and that's exactly what goes on with ticks. And you know, so I really don't see any significant changes. You know, there was discussion about emerald ash borer, but the real magic temperature with that is minus 30. And so, you know, for most of us, it's been very cold, but not that cold. And for that particular species, I think my colleagues are more concerned about the parasites that were brought here to help us control that may not survive the winter. It has been an old-fashioned winter, but as far as seeing a lot of impact, as I said, I don't expect it.
What about, we haven't talked about bed bugs for a while. What's going on in the state and nationally with bed bugs?
Well, you know, it's still a major issue. You know, you hear a lot about what happens in New York and Chicago, but, you know, we see as much bed bug activity throughout Wisconsin. It really is the same things driving it. The pesticides that we have really are not very effective. The heat treatments are effective, but they're really quite pricey, and so a lot of times people don't have the resources. And again, as far as culturally, you know, most of us don't worry about picking up used furniture and other things, which really are things that are probably the most likely way of bringing them in. And so it's continuing to be a major, major issue. Lots of people are looking at it and working on it, but ultimately, you just don't see it going away. So we're going to have to change our behaviors, and things have already changed. I mean, in many cases, when you buy a new mattress, the old model was they'd take your mattress away. They don't do that generally now because they don't want to take a risk of infesting the truck and the new mattresses and the like.
Oh,
and so, like I said, there's lots of interesting adjustments that are being made with it. And as I said, research goes on, but from what I see there, I don't see this changing in the near future.
Yeah, and probably the same with Japanese beetles. We're not.
Well, the good thing is, you know, we've talked before. Dr. Phil Barak, you know, is nice enough to share his citizen science project with me. That in the areas in Japanese beetle has been established for 10 years or more, the populations are way down. But the parts of the state where they're relatively new, like Green Bay, and when I was doing Garden Expo, I had somebody from Richland Center talking about it. They've only seen them for 2 or 3 years. They're going to be miserable for the next 6 or 7 years. But you know, what you see with these invasives is over time, it gets better, but it takes time. Yeah. And so the same, I've been asked about the cold. I saw Japanese beetle survive minus 30 in Beloit 15 years ago. So I just don't expect to see much effect of the cold temperature on them.
Well, Joe in Ironwood, Michigan has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. Years ago, I read about snow fleas. I've never seen them in my life, but on the third day of that heat wave we had last week, there they were. What in the world is that on the ground in the pass in my driveway? Thousands, tens of thousands all over my neighborhood, snow fleas.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you could just expand on how they get there.
Sure.
Sure.
So they really are, we call them springtails, and there are hundreds of different species, but there's a dark species that comes out often in February and March. In with, they hop, so that's where the name flea comes from.
They hop.
They don't bite. They honestly are not even considered true insects anymore. But the bottom line is they're a creature that lives in the soil that feeds on organic matter. And at certain times of the year, different species have these mass emergences. Now, I've heard the argument that this is a mass mating frenzy, but I don't see them coupled. I honestly think it's a population issue that they're so crowded in the area, they're just trying to get up and get out of there to look for a new territory. And so that's why you see it. So, you know, when it's minus 10, you won't see them out there. But you get a good sunny day, 20 degrees, being that dark bodied as they are, their bodies can warm up. And so they're active on the sunny days. On the cool days, you don't expect it. And they're light enough that the wind can blow them. So you can see them pile up an inch or two deep against a tree trunk or a fence sometime. Mm-hmm. So it's a real neat phenomena. But I've often seen if you're in an area, you see a lot of them this year, you go back next year, you don't see them. And again, that would argue that population thing, that their populations are exploding, moving off, and then they crash because of lack of habitat.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. On to Jesse in New Berlin. Hi, Jesse.
Hello, guys. I was wondering, has there ever been any kind of research to use different kinds of sound waves to deter or to repel insects out of homes?
Yes, and there's two parts to the story. There is, at least in the short run, some effect on things like cockroaches. If you put the equivalent of a fire engine siren, the cockroaches seem to be fearful for about 3 days, and then they lose it because
they adapt.
And so a lot of these sonic devices that you can see in the magazines, to be honest, the Federal Trade Commission is constantly chasing those companies around because their claims don't hold any water. They're not scientifically valid. And so, unfortunately, we don't have anything on that I have seen, any kind of sound waves that will affect insects. And as I said, like in many animals, that if they're constantly exposed to something and it doesn't harm them, they adapt.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Phil in Hebron, Illinois, wonders about honeybees during this cold winter. Mm-hmm. We're hearing from beekeepers who are seeing 40 to 100% hive loss.
So before we got into this colony collapse in the Varroa mites and whatnot, it was quite common in an average winter in Wisconsin to lose 30% of your hives because this is a brutal climate.
Yep.
It has to do with how much honey stores, how healthy are the bees, can they generate enough heat to get through the winter. So the more serious the winter, the more stress you put on them. Then you put on top of it the viruses and the mites and everything else. And so, yes, you will find pockets that have a lot of problems. We won't know until probably April as far as how well we do. But I'm anticipating 30% at least. And, again, if hives have had other problems, disease problems and whatnot, their chance of survival is even less.
Oh, man. Well, that's not such good news. Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist, our guest today. And, you know, this is our Wisconsin Public Radio winter membership drive. I'm Larry Mueller. Honeybee expert Judith Sears-Poisson joins us in the studio right now. Let's see. Oh, I pushed the button. It didn't go on.
Now I like honey, that's for sure.
She's a honey expert. She's a honey, too.
Aww.
Your gift makes a difference. It makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. So step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, last hour we heard from 64 new and returning members. That's really wonderful. And thank you so much for those pledges.
Right now we have a dollar-for-dollar match. Get this, up to $5,000.
Wow.
Yeah, this extremely generous match is from current members and Candy Girl Sweet Shop. That's Candy with a K in downtown Marshfield. And it means they'll match every dollar you give. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio.
So sweeten the deal. We've got candy. We've got honeybees. Get your pledge doubled right now. It's a great opportunity. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
From 11 to 1230 every weekday, we take a break from the news and from politics, and we focus on advice topics. The outdoors we talk about interesting things going on at the university, around the state. We look at health issues and finances. Today, of course, we're talking about the wonderful world of insects with Phil Pelletieri.
And we know how much people love hearing from folks like Phil on the show. And there's a not-so-secret ingredient to this winning recipe. It's not honey. It's listener support. It's your support. You make the program possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just a few minutes of your time. You tell us your name, the contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. And you can give in one lump sum, or better yet, become a monthly sustainer. No matter how you choose to give or how much you give, use the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I like listening to WPR because I learn so much. You never really stop learning. Being a sustainer for Wisconsin Public Radio makes my husband and I both feel like we're members of a big, wonderful family. My husband and I discussed it. He says, like the Barefoot Contessa, how easy is that? I think Wisconsin Public Radio is important because it makes you think outside the box. I tend to have a narrow vision, and listening to public radio has opened up my eyes and my ears and my mind to all that can be and all that is. I'm Pat Steers. I'm from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I enjoy very much being a WPR sustainer, and I know you will too.
Pat, you are a peach. Thank you so much for those wonderful comments. And hey, join Pat. Pledge at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. You can do it right there. I'm Larry Mueller with Judith Sears-Poisson, asking for your support of WPR during this winter membership drive. And maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members and Candy Girl Sweet Shop. That's Candy with a K in downtown Marshfield. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programs. Get your pledge matched dollar-for-dollar right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you're like me. You remember listening to WPR as a youngster, as a child, or maybe your kids really enjoy certain programs.
Whether it's an interesting story on NPR News, a piece of music, laughing along with the weekend shows, getting great gardening advice here on this show, WPR caught your imagination as a child, and it engages the minds of children today.
And you make all that possible when you participate as a member. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org. Or phone 888-202-2552.
We get kids calling the show every once in a while,
yes,
Larry.
We do.
And we love when they do. Many listeners become donors out of a sense of social responsibility. They want to make a contribution to the greater good because you think of WPR as a shared resource and because you've been getting value out of it over the past year or two or 10 or 40. It's time to put something back in.
Make a donation for yourself and also for the community. And, of course, the amount, it's up to you. $5 a month is an example, but you choose the amount. The important thing is that you participate. So give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Think of your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio as an investment in your future listening. Give us just a few minutes of your time and your donation in any amount, and in return, you'll get lots of great programs.
If you donate at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, in just a few minutes, you'll have made a wise investment, and it's one that pays dividends every single day.
Your pledge right now says, I value this program. I want more of it. It makes me think. It makes me laugh. You fill in the blank with how you feel when you hear this show. Those are powerful feelings, and you make a powerful statement when you support what you value, what you believe in. So give now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect, so give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR goes twice as far.
And you can ask for our new WPR logo t-shirt with your pledge of $120 or more. That's $10 a month. Get your t-shirt. It's really stylish and slick. You'll be proud to wear it. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I have one of those shirts.
I have one of those
shirts,
too.
I think there's a picture up on our Facebook page.
I think it is. I'll make sure there's one up there.
Well, I tell you what.
Maybe
it's
we'll
time.
Get Phil to model one.
We could. It knows
Phil,
the time.
Phil can be Mr. February in the WPR t-shirt.
If you haven't given... Now is the time to do it. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make that contribution right now.
And thank you.
Thank you very much for your support. If you've contributed, great. Thanks a lot. If you haven't, now is the time to do it. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Right now, we're talking with entomologist Phil Pelletieri about the wonderful world of insects and certainly inviting you to join in. We have open lines right now at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and certainly we would love to hear from you. You know, here's a nice comment from Beth on Facebook. Phil is awesome. Just took a class with him. Sad to see him retire, and you are retiring. She's wishing you very much happiness.
Oh, thanks much. But I'll still be doing public radio in retirement, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, so. that's the good thing. The best part.
I'm following the Dr. Craven model.
Yeah, follow the Craven model. That's the way we want you to do it. 2013 is one for the books. How did the submissions to the Insect Diagnostic Lab turn out last year? I don't think we've ever talked about that.
It turned out I set another record. Now, 2012 made a lot of sense to me because that was such a dynamic year with the very early spring and the strong southerly winds dumping all these interesting creatures off. So I was surprised because, you know, it was a cool, wet, slow spring. And so I was scratching my head a little bit, but now what I've picked up, we've talked about before that 60% of what I've processed in the lab are digital images. And I have an insect ID website, and when we looked at the figures there was 1.285 million hits on it. And so I'm getting spillover from that.
Unbelievable.
And so that's good. But, you know, that's really gratifying that, you know, the work you put into putting those things, people do find useful. And so... you know, we had a couple state records, the European chafer, which is a June beetle relative up in Door County. There was a species of clothes moth that has been causing problems in mink facilities. And it's a European species, first time it was recorded in the state. And so we always get new things. So overall, I mean, the way I define this, the insect season is, when do I pray for the first frost? In a bad year, it could be even the 15th of July. Last year, I was getting close to September before I was getting the prayer beads out. It wasn't overly bad. The one thing I guess I've learned is, even like, you know, the ticks is interesting.
Yeah.
My past experience told me that they don't do well after a drought, so I wasn't expecting much out of the ticks. And boy, they were on very strong. And so, one of the things in this business is you become humble because you find out that the insects aren't following the same books that you're reading. So.
Oh, man. You know, I had a great question somebody phoned in. And this has to do with bed bugs. Is there a national clearinghouse or database for bed bug information, like the effectiveness of various insecticides or methods of prevention, so forth?
Well, there's getting to be an awful lot of stuff. EPA has gotten quite involved with bed bug education and holding, you know, seminars and in forums and the like. One of the sites I suggest to people go to, because I really have seen a nice piece of educational material, there's a place called Bed Bugs TV. And it's a series of very small YouTube videos put together by a pest control person by the name of White out east. And he kind of covers some of the new research, some of the things they've had success with and the like. many of the places where bedbug research is going on, Virginia Tech, University of Florida, University of Kentucky, University of Minnesota, have a lot of stuff on. As I said, EPA is starting to get more and more materials out there. So there is all kinds of good material. You know, where you've got to be a little bit more careful is if it is not associated with a university and the like, is that there are, because this is such a big problem, a lot of people selling all kinds of things, and a lot of it does not have documentation to be effective. And so, you know, if you're going to a site that has got the next best thing that's going to solve the problem, right away I become very weary because it just doesn't hold up. In fact, as I said, every time we go to meetings, we hear about trials of new things. But as far as finding that magic bullet, I have just not seen anything.
And somebody wanted, would you repeat that bedbug?
Bedbug TV.
Bedbug TV.
Right. And you go to the site, as I said, they have an archive because Jack has been doing these things for probably 4 or 5 years. And as I said, he seems to keep pretty much up to date new research findings. He'll do little pieces and the like. And as I said, he's not selling anything here.
No.
So, you know, I know he does seminars and trainings around, but, you know, so he is really quite well known. But as far as information, I really have been very impressed.
And diatomaceous earth, do any good for bed bugs?
Yes, if you can put a bed bug in, force them to get into it. So they blow it into cracks and crevices. And, you know, if you had a pipe bed where you've got the hollow tubing, you can blow the diatomaceous earth down there and it will make that impossible for the bed bugs to survive. But, you know, some people don't understand the mechanism. This is an abrasive, so the bed bugs have to be in constant contact with it. So I've talked to people who have taken and put a ring of bed or a diatomaceous earth, you know, 2 inches deep all around their bed, thinking that will solve the problem. And it won't affect that much stuff. Isn't effective. And even though we think of that as being, it's an organic treatment, you don't want to breathe the dust anymore than
no.
you have to. So as I said, it is a tool. It does have uses, but by itself, it won't solve a major infestation.
Amy and Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I'm recently a new homeowner and have noticed a lot of spiders in the basement. So I've done a little bit of research and have come across what I call a spider ball, or it seems to be a type of a hedge possibly.
It's an Osage orange. It's the fruit of the Osage orange. And so here's a case where there is some truth to it. If you extract the oils out of that, there is some repellency. But what some of the people claim is you can put one in the corner of your kitchen and all the spiders will leave, and it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't. Okay.
No.
So the three I put in my basement, they're not doing anything.
If you crushed them and sprayed them, they would work for a relatively short period of time. So as I said, so the two things I guess I would think would be worth the effort is, to be honest, a good number of the spiders that are in your house crawled in from outside. And so one of the things that we can often do is caulk and tighten up any kind of vents and pipes, but also that interface between the siding and the foundation. You can often get material up in there, and you're probably better at going with a metal product. You know, the pest control people often will use a copper wool rather than steel wool because it doesn't rust, you know, and stuff it. So you're physically making it impossible for the spiders to migrate in. And then indoors, to be honest, I'm the biggest fan of the shop vac.
Yeah.
Because getting back in all the little corners and the like where the spiders are hiding and removing them that way is more effective than any sprays I can think of. So,
yeah.
Sure. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that information.
Yeah. Thanks, Amy. And Wayne in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi. Thank you for calling. Wayne, are you there? I bet he's listening to his phone. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go to Marty in Kenosha. Marty, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm going to probably feel pretty stupid for hearing this answer here, but beehives and the 30% or so death due to cold, why do we not just warm up those hives enough during the winter? And I'll listen to your answer off the air.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I think part of it is a lot of times the hives are located in places that you don't have an electrical source. You know, basically, the honeybee is the only species of wasp or bee that we have in the state that survives as a colony in the winter. Everybody else dies off except for the queens. And so what's going on here is the number of bees has to be at some critical mass because they literally utilize the honey as an energy source so that they can vibrate their muscles to create heat. So they do have to, they can generate their own heat. If everything goes well enough, it's a strong enough colony that there's enough food. Some beekeepers at times get worried because there can be enough food on the top of the hive, but if the bees are on the bottom of the hive and can't get to it, that can be a problem. So that's where the cold gets in. The colder it is, the less mobile the bees can be. You know, when we were lucky enough to have a USDA bee lab here doing research, that's one of the things they looked at. Do you get better survival if you bring the colonies into a sheltered building? You know, not even heat it, but shelter it, you know. And there are some adjustments, but basically I think, you know, in this case, it probably would help somewhat. But if there are still diseases and mites and some of these other maladies, as I said, unfortunately, it's not just the winter the bees are having to deal with. It's a whole complex of things that is making it difficult. Although, you know, I'm more optimistic than I was 5 or 6 years ago as far as the honeybee populations.
Good.
You know, one of the things that 10 years ago when all the stuff was starting to go crazy, we never got calls about wild swarms. You know, that there just were no feral colonies out there. They got all wiped out because of the mites and other complications. I get those calls quite commonly now. And in talking to Marla Spivak, who does a lot of research with honeybees up in Minnesota, you know, the question is, are we selecting for some populations that are resistant to some of these things, especially the mites? And so, as I said, it seems the bees are making some adjustment. The other caution I always give people is when you see some of these articles that talk about collapse disorder and whatnot, sometimes the figures they give out there aren't totally accurate. Now, you may have a localized area of 100% loss, but generally in other places, you don't see that mortality. And as I said, the bottom line, 30% is what I expect. A couple, 3 years ago when we had a mild winter, it was only 10%, which was amazing. Yeah. I've never seen that in my career. You know, so you will see some of those climate effects and the like. And as I said, people are constantly trying to adjust to this to make sure that we've got honeybees around. And, of course, also all the interest in our native pollinators and what we can do to enhance them.
As well, yeah. I was thinking back back to the comment about the hives and heat warming the hives up. I imagine there's probably some enterprising person somewhere that's figured out a solar kind of setup that probably
would
help out a little
definitely.
Bit. And then you wouldn't have to worry about the electricity.
And as I said, part of it, just you don't have to keep it at 70 degrees. You have to keep it warm enough that the bees can be mobile enough that they can utilize the honey that exists inside the hive.
Inside the hive, you betcha. Why do June bugs, this is a Facebook question from Ben, why do they fly around and bounce off of things, and where do they go after June?
That. Believe it or not, we got about 25 species of June beetles, and we call them May beetles. And we also call them May bugs, but they are true beetles. 2 to 3 year generation, the grubs feed on various grassy weeds in particular. The adults are relatively short-lived, so their main purpose is to find a mate. They seem to be pretty clumsy in flying. And so they, even without light, seem to bump into things. But then the problem is many species do have some attractancy to light. And you know, they use that for orientating, going from point A to point B. Supposedly we think it's the moon that is the main thing that they clue into, and our lights confuse them. As I said, just by nature, those scarab beetles just seem to be clumsy, the way they're built. But life must work for them because, boy, there's enough species out there. And although I will tell you, in my career, watching the June beetle populations aren't near in the urban areas of what they were when I was a kid, and I don't really know what the dynamic is there. We used to have much more predictable big peaks. We don't see that anymore. Again, is it climate change? I know you're going to ask a lot of questions, but I really don't understand why we're not seeing quite the numbers that I remember.
Yeah, very interesting. Larry Mueller here with Judith Junebug Sears Poisson. And
I sometimes bounce off of things too.
Oh, this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. Your support is an essential piece of the funding for all the programs you enjoy here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And this drive is the time for you to take action. So I want you to become a WPR contributor with your gift at WPR.org. or at 888-202-2552.
Well, and this is such a perfect time to make that gift because we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $5,000. It's in effect right now. It's a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, current members and Candy Girl Sweet Shop with a K in downtown Marshfield will donate an additional dollar. It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. So do that right now. Double the impact of your pledge. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Chances are the Ideas Network has covered an issue that's really close to you. It might be gardening, or maybe it's alternative medicine, or it's the environment, or it's insects. We try to bring you shows that you will find relevant and hopefully interesting and enjoyable. And because Wisconsin Public Radio touches your life, I hope you'll make a pledge. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Well, and Donna from Madison says, listening to Larry and inspired to make sure this type of programming continues. So thank you for that, Donna. You know, more than 13,000 WPR members are proud sustaining members. They provide a steady, reliable stream of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can join their ranks by choosing a monthly giving amount, say maybe it's $10 a month, and then setting it up on an ongoing basis. It's the best way to support the station you rely on. So become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
WPR has been around for a long time because we're committed to quality. The quality is possible thanks to you. Listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many other programs as well. You're part of the quality you hear every day on WPR. When you donate at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We are in the midst of our WPR drive, and I hope you'll go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this winter membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson, asking for your support of WPR. Your gift, maybe it's $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose really is the right amount, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members and Candy Girl Sweet Shop, that's Candy with a K, in downtown Marshfield. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programs. So get your pledge matched dollar-for-dollar right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You probably love WPR because it's your source for intelligent radio, and there are bills associated with high-quality radio, and that's where you come in. Your support is very important.
Make a pledge right now. It's quick. It's easy. You'll be finished in no time at all. Your contribution in any amount, say $5 or $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, makes WPR possible.
Give the amount that's right for you. And if you need some help figuring that out, consider this. Put a cup of coffee on the counter and put in a dime for every time you hear something you're glad you heard.
Although make sure there's not coffee in there.
Don't do that.
You're going to get splashed. Well, especially if you listen to WPR as much as I'm guessing you do, there's going to be a lot in that cup. Even if it's only three things a day, then WPR is worth about $10 a month to you. So don't delay. Make your contribution now, maybe of $10 a month, but any amount is appreciated. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect this hour. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR goes twice as far.
And ask for our new WPR logo t-shirt with your pledge of $120 or more. That's $10 a month. Get your t-shirt. Wear it proudly. Do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, there have been some t-shirts that I haven't really liked that we've put together, but this one, I like this one.
I like it too.
It's a nice shirt. If you're not already a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's easy to set up ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. And if you get a black t-shirt, that'd be good because that's mine. And we have matching colors. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Larry gives you important information and important T-shirt critiques as well. Well, Diane from Strum said WPR is like an old friend, always there and a joy to listen to. Well, Diane, thank you so much. Join Diane in supporting WPR and take advantage of that dollar for dollar match right now. You can do that. Where can you do that, Larry?
Well, you go to WPR.org. That's one way to do it, WPR.org. Or you can phone, and the phone number is 888-202-2552. That's 888-202-2552. Do it right now.
Here's a look at what's coming up this afternoon here on the Ideas Network. At 12:30 on Chapter a Day, Carl Schmidt reads from The Land Remembers by Ben Logan. It's a charming memoir about growing up on a farm in southwest Wisconsin. After 1, Kathleen Dunn and her guest examine the state of American politics against the backdrop of history. And after 2, a look at a list of must-read books. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show this afternoon.
Catch up on the latest news, ideas, books, and culture every weekday afternoon on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. From 3 to 6, join us for engaging conversations about politics, science, art, pop culture, and more.
We'll learn a lot and have fun along the way.
And we'll always keep an eye on what's going on in Wisconsin and what makes our state unique.
It's Central Time, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
The Kathleen Dunn Show. Central Time, What Do You Know? These programs and many more are possible thanks to listener support. You can learn about WPR programs, schedules, and so much more at WPR.org. Thank you.
Wisconsin Public Radio's audio archive is an endless stream of knowledge and entertainment. Find what you're looking for or discover something new. Start listening now at WPR.org.
Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension Entomologist. He heads up the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Always great to have him come by. And certainly if you have a question for him, I hope you'll join in. Have you had some interesting insect experiences lately or some that you don't like so much? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. But a Facebook question from, Oh, Lynn in Lodi, who said, last summer we had many, many honeybees gathering at our saltwater pool. They weren't aggressive toward us, but just toward the water. Why are they attracted to the salt water? Is pool water poisonous to them?
Well, depending what the additives are, I would assume there is potentially a problem with the gut flora and fauna. You know, if you got chlorine and other things in there, that probably in the long run is not good for their health. Mm-hmm. Bees, we talked about how they have to generate heat in the summer. Well, they have to cool. Heat in the winter, they need to cool in the summer. And so they literally will bring water into the hive. And as that evaporates, it lowers the temperature. And they also beat their wings so that they're moving air through. So it's really very fascinating animals as far as their adaptations. And in dry years in particular, where there is less water available, we often get this complaint at bird baths and other things. And the thing about bees is that they really are only aggressive when they're near the nest and that's threatened. So you can find that they really don't cause you any concern. And, you know, in some cases where people have to start thinking is, you know, if they've got kids out there, they don't want this to happen. You have to provide the bees a water source closer to their hive, hopefully so that they'd stop coming to the pool. But as I said, depending on the salts and the complexes there, I would be somewhat concerned that overall it would not be good for their health.
And, you know, I was thinking about our bird bath. We have bees galore coming to that bird bath in the summertime, and there's never been a problem.
Yeah, it's the same thing, you know, when you're gardening and they're in the, you know, bumblebees and stuff are working the flowers. It, as I said, they really, as long as one doesn't fly up your shirt, you really don't have any concern.
Craig in Amherst, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Last summer, my wife and I were out by our elderberry plants, and there was this large black and yellow bug on one of the leaves in the shade, and it had a zigzag pattern on it, like a Charlie Brown shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never seen anything like it before, and we didn't know what it was. And I was curious if you did know.
So this is a bit of a guess, but my suspicion, it was a species of longhorn wood boar. There is three or four of them, one on maple, one on black locust, and the like, that have that kind of pattern. So that's what I would look for.
We have black locust on our land.
Okay, so that would make sense. You often see the adults at flowers, but they could just be hanging out. And, you know, as a family, they're really quite attractive beetles. Many of them have bright stripes and spots and the like. But as I said, that would be my guess with that host, because it is a relatively common insect in the state.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Craig, for calling. And let's turn to Dan in Sparta next. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
Great. We have a neighbor that has honeybees, and we have a little, maybe a 2-foot by 4-foot little pond out in front of our house, and it seems like they're always swarming around that water, and we were wondering, is there a way, without harming them, to try and keep them away? It's kind of right by the entrance of our house, and it's just kind of a nuisance.
Well, again, I think this would be a case of maybe talking to him and seeing if he could provide a water source for them closer to where the hives are, because that's what it's all about, is that they're going to go to the first place they can find a good water source. And, you know, there may be a chance that you can provide that before, but I think, again, if you're on good relations with the neighbor, it might be worth discussing that and just explain your concern about the bees and the like, and as I said, see if you can lessen the number by giving them a water source that's closer to where they are.
Yeah, that makes the most sense to me.
There's no repellents or anything that would have any effect there, unfortunately. So as I said, it's all about just trying to get them a different water source.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Dan. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And some more callers, one just joining us, as a matter of fact, Sylvia in Appleton. So let's go to her. Hi, Syl. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Got on very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I have an observation on spiders a few years ago that I found very interesting, and they were ballooning along the side of the road. And it was just like a Halloween, you know, where people spread the webbing.
Yeah.
The whole side of the road, like 5-6 feet in, about 50 feet, were just covered with spider webs.
Yeah, I have been lucky enough that people have sent me pictures of that a few times over my career. And it almost looks like a science fiction movie. It's hard pressed to believe there's that many little spiders around. And because there's so many species, a lot of times you don't even know what species it is. But it is a phenomenon that's observed at times. And, you know, something must be going right that particular year to get those kind of large populations, because that's not the norm. But we do see it on occasion.
Yeah.
And last year, there were hardly any spiders around here. I mean, I was just kind of getting into them, and I've had Cyclosaconicas for years. Not a one. The Arrhenius, there was one big one one night, and that was it for the whole year.
Yeah, it was not an easy year for creatures. We had talked about a bad year for butterflies in the spring.
Oh, yeah.
There was no bees. And again, I think that combination of 2012 and the drought, I mean, it just kind of got things out of sync and stressed out. And, you know, the good news is things can recover quite quickly. But I, as I said, overall, it didn't feel that buggy a year. And I think a lot had to do with the combination of the drought and then a slow spring. And so things did not have an easy time. It definitely.
Thanks for calling, Syl. Appreciate it. Barb in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
My mom lives in a small town in Wausaukee, and last year, when it was getting closer to fall, she had a blue bee that came to eat out of her hummingbird feeder.
Blue?
It was blue, and it was little. It was a small blue bee.
Mm-hmm. You know, probably a halictid, which is a family of bees, but without seeing it, we have 400 species of native bees in the state. And the halictids in general are often metallic-y, metallic greens, metallic blues, but it could be a different species. So, again, unfortunately, it's a solitary bee, meaning that it doesn't live in a hive. per se. Each female provisions their own burrows or nests, per se. But as I said, without seeing a picture, but look that up. You can look up leafcutter bees. That may show it to you. You can look up mason bees, but mason bees are more active in the spring typically. Those are two thoughts.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you. Because I'd never seen a blue one. That's why I was curious. So thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Mason bees, they are solitary, are they not?
Yeah, they're solitary. They're quite well known because they use them in orchards because they're active so early in the spring, and they tend to fly at cooler temperatures than honeybees or bumblebees. And you can buy these bee boards. They utilize holes that are about 3/8 of an inch in diameter and about 3 or 4 inches deep. And they collect pollen, lay their eggs, partition these off. And so you can buy these bee boards from Washington State, but we always tell people, you know, they're native here. So if you provide the right habitat, you have a good chance of rearing them yourself. Now, sometimes people are disappointed because, you know, in the middle of the city, you put up a mason bee house, you don't get any takers.
Sure.
It's more likely out in the woods. But neat bee, and just an example, we have, as I said, a large number of these creatures that people pay no attention to that have been here all along, and they're fascinating creatures. And some of them very dependent on only a few number of flowers species. Other ones are generalist and feed on things. And, you know, the thing I pick on honeybees because they're not native.
Yeah.
And native bees. So, you know, when we get a chance, we would like the homegrown ones to be appreciated, too.
Well, we have a winter membership drive right here. Your support is the foundation of our budget. As you listen today to Phil and myself talking, and it's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programming. We'll get back to Phil in just a minute, but Judith Sears-Poisson joining me again to encourage you to go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 right now to make your gift in support of the program you count on.
Well, and this is a really important time to do just that because we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $5,000 in effect right now, but that only goes till noon. So we only have a few more minutes to make sure we don't leave any of that generous challenge on the table. It's a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, current members and Candy Girl Sweet Shop, that's Candy with a K, in downtown Marshfield will donate an additional dollar, but it's only until noon. It's their way of inspiring you to support WPR. So double the impact of your pledge right now. Don't delay by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
About $1,700 or so to go to reach that goal. Listening to the Ideas Network, you know, it's a lot like going out for coffee with a smart friend. It's enjoyable. It's informative. Piques your curiosity.
Gets you revved up.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, just like that cup of coffee, someone has to pay for it. You make this daily cup of coffee on the Ideas Network possible with your financial support. Give right now. Take advantage of that dollar-for-dollar match, which expires at noon, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, Judith would never tell you that giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is hard because it's not. It is easy.
It's easy peasy.
She's the first to tell you that. All we need is your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay it.
You can save time and money by using a credit card if you can. Make a one-time gift, or better yet, start automatic sustaining donations directly from your bank account. You choose how to give. That's the important part. And then you do it. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And whether your pledge is $5 a month or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift. So please make your donation right now in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Still room for you to get in on that dollar-for-dollar pledge. Please help us make that $5,000 match by noon. You know, we hear from a lot of first-time pledgers who are giving because they've finally gotten their first real job out of college and can finally afford to give. I remember that feeling. It's a great feeling. Or people who turn 30 and realize, uh-oh, I think I'm a grown-up now.
I'm 30.
It's time to give to WPR.
Or you're somewhat older, like me, you know, and you think... Just slightly older, and you say, well, you know what? Giving money is something I believe on. It's a service I rely on. It's a great way to commemorate a new phase of my life. How about you? We encourage you. You decide the amount. $5 a month, that's an example of what many first-time donors give. Some give $10 a month. And go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You know what's an important new phase of life, Larry?
No.
Retirement.
Oh.
I wonder if Mr. Pelletieri might just pledge.
Oh, definitely.
In honor of his retirement.
As it is, when I'm traveling around, that's what I'm listening to, and now I'll have a little more free time to listen. So.
Well, there you go. Phil Pelletieri, newly retired, is going to pledge. How about you? Your support is so important for many reasons. One of them is that it helps pays for equipment upgrades. That means that you and your fellow listeners get a clear signal, statewide news coverage, a useful website at WPR.org, and much more.
And, you know, it wouldn't be a bad time to sort of to give a contribution in honor of Phil.
There you go.
You know, because this is his last week, really, of then he goes on retirement. He's going to still come back and be with us. So, you know, think about maybe a support, some dollar support in Phil's honor. Your support helps WPR stay current so that you get the programs you depend on without fail, as well as all those extras like your mobile app.
I use that mobile app all the time.
Yeah, it's great. And be a part of keeping WPR strong and relevant right now. Give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
So Larry knows I don't get that nervous during pledge because I know our listeners are going to come through. But I'm getting a little bit nervous now because we still need about $1,200 to make sure that we take full advantage of this dollar-for-dollar match. It's in effect right now just until noon. It's from current members and Candy Girl Sweet Shop. That's Candy with a K in downtown Marshfield. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even further in paying for WPR programs. These are real challenges. If we don't make it, we don't get every dollar. So help us make that goal right now. Get your pledge match dollar for dollar, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you get to choose how much you give. Any amount makes a difference. You know, here are some suggested amounts. The same amount you pay per month for Netflix, for example, or for cable.
Or for coffee, which for me is more than I pay for cable and Netflix, which, you know, WPR is something I'm guessing you look forward to every day and maybe several times a day. So pledge now. You pick the amount. Your pledge makes the difference, especially with this dollar for dollar match. We're getting close, about $600 to go. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've donated a few years ago, feel like you've done your part, but you still enjoy listening to WPR year after year. Your continued support is what keeps us going.
And there is no better time to give again than right now during this dollar for dollar matching pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. We'll be glad to have you back, and you'll help us make this goal.
$250 to go.
Oh, we're so close.
Let's donate right now. Give us a contribution at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. I don't even want to lose $250.
I know. 888-202-2552, WPR.org. Do it right now, and we will take advantage of this dollar-for-dollar match.
Or you can phone 888-202-2552. Whatever you do, donate right now. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. No matter what the season, there are lots of insects around us. And whether you're talking about mosquitoes or moths or box elder bugs or millipedes, they are always fascinating and make for some great conversation. Larry Mueller here again. Thanks for joining us. Entomologist Phil Pelletieri is our guide to the world of insects. And he helps us figure out what we're dealing with and what to do about it. And Phil, of course, always great to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
I really appreciate you taking the time. And you may have a question for him about insects. Maybe there's something in your neighborhood. Maybe there's something in your home you have a question about. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Marcus in Green Bay, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
I have two little short stories about insects and the wind patterns and stuff, and it's one of them's kind of related to the lady who called in about spider webs alongside the road, a whole bunch of them. So
yeah,
I have a sand pit right near my behind my apartment there, and I kind of hang out there sometimes, just around or whatever. And it's on my way to the woods and all that, so I'm familiar with the area. And then so I noticed one day the same thing with those spider webs, and they were all had a pattern, and they kept going forever. And it's the wind. The prevailing winds and stuff, they kind of funnel through this area because there's real a lot of contour, big hill here and there.
Yep.
And you could just see where the wind. So somebody must have had a good year downwind or upwind there. And then when those eggs hatch, you know how they float around, like little kites a lot of times for spiders.
Yeah. Right?
Somehow. Yeah. So the wind caught them and it apparently never raised them up high or wherever they came from. And they just whooshed in this real neat pattern. You could just see it. And then where the wind allows to fan out, they spread out and got thinner and thinner, so you could just almost see them floating without even. And then the other one, though, also near that area, because there's large hills and stuff, it was a flying ant. And you know sometimes you can look up and you can see the clouds of them rising, on a good day. And then sometimes you'll see the terns or seagulls following, but they were coming up out of the woods or something and over the sand pit, and they're just, I didn't see the source, the tons of them were coming up. And then The wind goes upward because of this one large hill, and it was a real big hatching, launching of the queens. And they got carried straight up in this little, again, like a vortex,
Yeah.
And there's so many, you could see it going up and up and up, and then, yep, the terns are up there waiting for them, and then it got carried away, just one cloud on the horizontally, then it just got carried away. And you could just visualize, because of the wind and everything. It's, I don't know.
It's really cool. It really sounds cool.
Yeah, well, in particular, wind patterns are very fascinating, and those of us who hunt are always nervous about which direction the wind's going. And so this must have been, I assume, late summer, early fall when you saw this in the afternoon.
I think the spiders were, I think it was late fall. I know it was warm and summery, but I know they only hatch at certain times, and some of them hatch at various times. But
yeah, because we get the biggest swarming of the field ants and cornfield ants in afternoons in the late summer, in a lot of spiders. I mean, different spiders have different ways of going about in their development. But as I said, I expect to see more spiders and baby spiders in the fall. So that's why I was asking.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Marcus. Yeah. Appreciate the call. Mike in Johnson Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
We have an organic CSA farm in the Johnson Creek area, and we were very happy to come across some praying mantis in some of our fields last summer, and I'm wondering what we can do to try to encourage them to stay and prosper there.
Well, the interesting thing is that mantids have only been breeding in our state for about the last 10 years. And what has always hurt them in the past is the winters. And honestly, that is one creature I'm nervous about. They lay their eggs in this, it looks like a golf ball, but it's kind of foamy, and we call it an oatheca. And that seems to be the most sensitive to cold. And if you were lucky enough to find these, and typically you're going to find them in more bushes and hedges and the like, is to bring them into a protected site and the like, and then in the spring take them out. You don't want to bring them in into the house where it stays warm, because then you're going to get them all out of sync. But if you can put them in a garage or the like and then take them out and have them hatch naturally, that will enhance it. So we'll wait and see on this. As I said, when I sit and think of the four or five things that the winter may have an impact on, that's one that comes to mind. Because as I said, early in my career, we didn't have any evidence of them breeding in the state, but definitely in the southern two tiers of counties, at least, in the last 5 to 10 years. And my colleagues in Iowa and Minnesota have seen the same thing. So we'll wait and see. There should be some in protected sites. So I don't think they're going to get totally wiped out, but it wouldn't surprise me if they get knocked back.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Mike. And Matt in Reedsburg, your turn. Hi, Matt.
Hi. I just have I'm wondering, how does a spider get a single strand of web
from point A to point B, like when I'm walking down a trail, it hits me in the face. How does it get from, you know, I mean, it goes like 12 feet across. Is it through wind or what, how does that, how do they cross?
Yeah, generally speaking. I mean, there are cases where spiders walk from one to the X, but a lot of times they're using wind to get in. Sometimes, even in my own basement, I said, how in the devil did they do that? You know, because it just doesn't seem to make any sense, but they're very capable. And, you know, not all spiders utilize webs to that degree, but as I said, it is quite fascinating.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Matt. You can join in, too, by the way. We have open lines. Get you on pretty fast at 1-800-642-1234. Call in with your questions. Facebook question from Gail. She said, this morning I noticed a daddy long legs sort of kind of bug that was between the screen and the crank-out window.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to take a picture, but it didn't work. It was yellow, translucent, skinny body about the length of a grain of rice. Don't think it would be happy outside. Didn't want to let it inside. Hoping it'll do its thing in this skinny little home. Any advice?
Well, it could have been a cellar spider, too. Cellar spiders look very much like daddy longlegs. Daddy longlegs are technically not true spiders. It's a separate group of arthropods. And, you know, the point is if the temperature in that interface is somewhere around 50 degrees or less, they're probably not going to be able to be active. And they will stay dormant. So don't worry about that. And when things finally warm up, they'll move out. So, you know, the only trick, and this is what happens with a lot of these creatures that try to come into your house to spend the winter, is that when it finally does start warming up in the spring, it's still not warm enough outside to support them. So in the long run, it was a mistake on their part to come in. But as I said, I think I would just let it be and wait and see. And it may just still be able to kind of limp through as long as it doesn't get too warm too fast, because that would have caused it to wake up, nothing to eat, and they kind of burn their energy reserves. And that's why the box elder bugs die and all these other creatures that unfortunately do show up in people's houses during the winter.
Tom in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, appreciate the call.
Yes, I've got a question about, I guess they're wasps. It's a big nest about the size of a soccer ball in the tree.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a marble. It's
sure.
Just beautiful, and I hate to destroy it.
Oh, no, you can collect that now because they don't come back to utilize it, and they're all dead.
Good. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, so, and people lots of times, you know, will keep these because I've seen them sold at craft fairs, and, you know, I swear just about every bar up north you walk in, you've got a giant ball-faced hornet's nest somewhere. And to be honest, I have a couple in my lab that I'm going to be donating out at the hunting camp because they're really nice conversation pieces. And so, yeah, you know, usually about the 1st of November, you can go and collect them. And depending on what kind of leaf tissue and stuff, you can see different colored bands. My colleague Bob Jean had a great one down here on campus where the wasps were chewing off the different colored posters that people had for advertising things. And so there was blue strips and yellow strips and pink strips. It really was quite fascinating. And so, you know, they'll utilize any cellulose form they can find. And as I said, so sometimes you'll see some interesting colors that may come more from paper than leaf.
Now, do you need to do anything to preserve it? Would you spray it or anything with any?
Really not. Just keep it out of water. Basically, you know, a lot of water. And even that, it's somewhat waterproof. But, as long as it's protected, it should be just fine.
There we go.
So go. Thank you very much.
Yeah, go get it, Tom. Thanks for calling. And Roxanne in the Melrose. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Hey, I really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I just tuned in. I'm on the road. I hope we don't get cut off. I'm calling about these, I think they're called corn borer beetles, that invaded my neighborhood last summer and ate everything in my garden except my kale and my potatoes, basically. And they were, just swarming in the air. They got on your clothes. They were just, they were just voracious eaters. And I didn't know what to do. And I'm hesitant to even have a garden this summer because of them.
Okay. Were they kind of yellowish or greenish and some of them had stripes?
Yep.
Okay. So the green ones are called northern corn rootworms, and the yellow ones with stripes are western corn rootworms. And the adults primarily, you know, they prune corn silk, so farmers have some problems there. But I tend to see most of the feeding on flower petals and pollen. They're looking for protein sources. And to be honest, there isn't any easy answer to this one. It probably was influenced by where there were cornfields around you. You know,
I'm in Melrose, and the whole neighborhood is surrounded with cornfields.
Yeah, and so if some of the neighbors have different planting schedules, they put soybeans, life is going to be much better. But, you know, these things under the right conditions are coming up by the hundreds of thousands per acre, and then they're migrating in, and that's where it becomes so difficult to do anything. I know dahlia growers and other things that will literally grow their plants inside screened houses just to protect them because that's the only way they can get the plants
through. Wow.
That's what I was thinking about doing, but what about the bees? What about pollination?
I think one of the things you can do is keep the bottom of this somewhat accessible. I mean, rootworms are not overly smart. So they'll tend to come try to fly from the top, and the bees, I think, can get access from underneath. Or you can take it off for certain parts of the day, you know, maybe in the morning when the bees might be more active, and then put it on as we get in the later afternoon. You know, so it's, yeah, it as I said, the unfortunate thing, it's influenced by what's growing around you, and you really have no control of that.
That's too bad. It was very discouraging to see them, and all my tomatoes, they just, and peppers, And I'm afraid, then I read that they get down in the soil and that they're just waiting there.
You won't have that problem. The way they get through the winter is eggs. They can only breed in cornfields. So their grubs or larvae will not feed on anything else. And so, as I said, don't worry about that aspect of it.
Thank you very much for calling, Roxanne. Appreciate your call very much. I want to get an email from Jenny Ann. From Milwaukee, she says, over the past few years, my backyard's gotten so many cicadas. There's a line of pine trees. Could that be why they're attracted to my yard? I don't mind a few of them, but they have turned the earth into Swiss cheese with their holes, and they attach themselves to my lawn furniture. What do I do? I don't want to use poisons. Will the cold winter reduce their numbers?
I don't think so. Although my observation last year, it was a very good cicada year for dog day cicadas. They were late in coming, but once they came on strong and didn't go away till October. So because they have 2 and 3 year life cycles, it may have just been when these phenomena, and it might stay quiet for a couple of years before they come back. It suggests you've got a very healthy area. I mean, you have to have woody plants for them to feed on.
Yeah.
And so that may become some of this, but as I said, I don't really know any way to stop them other than hand-picking them or teach the birds to eat them type of thing. But as I said, I wonder if it may be just part of one of the few things that had a very good year, and it will be a while before we see this again.
No, there you go. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson, just back from her 2014 cicada tour around
safari.
Wisconsin.
Cicada safari.
And not finding much this time of the year.
Nope.
But she is here to help me tell you to give right now any amount to WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You rely on WPR for information and in-depth discussions. We rely on you to keep programs like this one's like this one going. So give right now.
You know, there are pictures of me as just a little girl petting worms. When they would crawl out on the sidewalk, I would bend down and pet them. I'm sure they appreciated it. Don't you think, Phil?
Yes.
Talking to plants, petting worms.
That's good for you.
Good. Probably better for me than for them, but, right. Well, you can give right now any amount, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Thank you so much to all of you who helped us take advantage of that generous matching gift last hour. We made it, and we feel great about that, and you should too. That match is done, but now our goal by 12:30 is 15 pledges. Your pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, gets us one step closer to meeting that new goal and one step closer to funding the programs you count on.
You've been enjoying the conversation today, I'm sure, with Phil Pelletieri about the wonderful world of insects. And I think this is a great example of interesting and informative conversations that we have on this show.
It really is. And we hear from people all the time how much they love hearing to Phil and Scott Craven and Melinda Myers, who will be on this Friday on Garden Talk. Now take a few minutes to make this program and all of the programs you appreciate possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might even consider making a donation of $1,200. Listener support is crucial to our future. And if you'd like to do more than you've done before, consider making that leadership contribution of $100 a month. Of course, any amount is appreciated at WPR.org or at 888 888- 202-2552.
We know that physical exercise is an important part of staying healthy. Well, so is mental exercise. And just looking at today's show, we learned about bed bugs. We learned about bees. We learned about emerald ash borer. We learned how to prevent certain insects, how to encourage others. Getting your daily mental workout is so easy when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Listening to WPR keeps your brain in great shape. Your gift, any amount, helps pay for the programs, and so it keeps you and WPR healthy. Please give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, a really great and easy way to support WPR is to become a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
Many people give $10 or $15 a month, but you choose whatever amount is right for you. So become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I enjoy your programs. What I enjoy most about it is, you know, I'm born in Milwaukee. I have an urban point of view of things. When I listen to your callers calling throughout the states, I have all kinds of points of view from a rural, farm, you name it. I just like to hear the points of view through the state, and I enjoy and I learn from the other callers.
I hope you'll pledge now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your support of WPR during this winter membership drive. And again, maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we are looking for five more pledges in the next 6 minutes. We can definitely do that with your help. Thank you so much if you've already given.
And if you haven't, you can help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, earlier we heard from listener Diane from Strum, Wisconsin, who said WPR is like an old friend, always there and a joy to listen to. Well, I think Diane could have substituted Larry Mueller for WPR. Larry Mueller is like an old friend, always there and a joy to listen to. People love listening to Larry. I'm guessing you love listening to Larry. He's enthusiastic. He's curious. He's always quick with a laugh. He's always quick with a great question. And that's why you tune in weekdays 11 to 12:30 to listen to Larry. You know you don't get a show like this anywhere else. And this show is possible, pledge by pledge, only on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry is an icon of Wisconsin Public Radio. Show your support for WPR, for this show, and for Larry right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know, when you said I was curious, I thought you were going to say cute. And I was like, oh, good.
That's you great. Are cute. Well, you know, and I said that Phil could wear the WPR t-shirt and be Mr. February, but you know, March is right around the corner. You could be Mr. March.
Well, what about you? You listen to WPR because you count on information, on entertainment. Hopefully we have a good time. We have some great discussions, and, you know, I think we have a nice sense of community.
We really do.
Yeah. You make Wisconsin a better place just by listening and being a more well-rounded person.
You're a listener. Now take the next step and become a member. Your donation of $5 a month makes Wisconsin a better place, where great radio is available to everyone. So please, give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We ask that you make a contribution, and we also ask that you give an amount that's comfortable for you. Some give $5 a month, some give $100 or more every month.
Whatever the amount, we'll use it to support the programs you enjoy, like this one, keeping your source of information and entertainment going strong. So give now. Whatever amount is comfortable for you, really, we appreciate them all. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And tell you, we've talked about habits. I mean, you've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. I hope you can make a habit of donating. Don't you think that's a good idea?
I think it's a great idea. And, you know, I'm guessing most of us have quite a few bad habits that we would like to get rid of. Well, here's a good habit that you can be proud of. Get started on that habit today, or get back on the bandwagon with that habit with your pledge of any amount. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And we only have four to go.
Four more.
Four more pledges to go, and what do we got here?
About four minutes.
A couple minutes. We're going to stop talking in about a minute and a half or so. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't stop giving. Give right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, you can ask for a new WPR logo T-shirt with your pledge of $120 or more. That's $10 a month. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You can become a sustainer. We really appreciate members who provide monthly support. If you're already a sustainer, thank you so very, very much. Maybe today is the day you increase your support by $5 a month or whatever amount you choose. You can do that at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Robert and Laura from Eau Claire say, "We love Larry's show, Joy's shows, and Chapter a Day. Thank you so much for enlightening me during the day." Well, guess what? Larry's show is wrapping up right now. Chapter a Day is coming up right after it. We provide you great entertainment and information all day long on the Ideas Network. So show your support right now. Join Robert and Laura, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Only two to go. We only have two more.
Two little pledges.
Two pledges. You be one of those two right now. Go to WPR.org and make your contribution right now. WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Phil Pelletieri is going to pledge. How about you? 888-202-2552, WPR.org. And thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.